Tommy Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. And I'm here with the Lo in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
How are you, lovely husband?
Wonderful.
Wonderful. You're always wonderful.
I am always wonderful. I mean,
it's a lie.
No.
You are lying to our listeners.
No.
But that's fine, sweetie. Go ahead.
No, I have a wonderful life. I can't complain.
My goodness,
yeah, I mean,
what
I go through.
This? Yeah. It's all of this nonsense. Come on now.
No, it's true.
Oh, I have a wonderful life.
Yes, I do. Have a
and I wrote a little song about it.
No, I'm not Taylor Swift. I'm sorry. No, she writes about her breakup. Sorry.
Anyway, we started off by giggling. And Tab Hunter, our giant boy, has jumped up on the table. Tab Hunter's getting surgery next week, and we're very sad.
Oh, come on. Let's not talk about it.
It's fine.
He's fine. Yeah.
He is fine.
It's fine. All right. Well, now we're going to have to.
Yeah, why not?
He has a little lump on his tail, and then has that has to be removed. That's all.
Right. And
but
they
he's
don't
fine.
Know if they can keep the tail or not. We'll find out on the day.
Well, not the entire tail, whatever. See, I didn't want to get into all these details. But anyway.
Well, everybody loves Tab Hunter.
But
he'll be fine.
He'll be fine. He's just fine.
Even if he loses his tail, and I'm half the cat owners listening to this know some cat that's missing a tail or an ear or a leg, and they're always fine. Cats are hardy, hardy creatures.
Yeah,
so.
He's fine.
But we hate that our little boy is going in for surgery.
I know.
Anyway, that's what's going on in our life because we're boring. There's not a lot going on in our lives right now. But we have some things to talk about. We just realized, honestly, only within the last few hours, we were like, oh, we didn't really do a podcast about the coronation. Not really. We did a few things leading up to it. And I went to Lorenzo this morning. I was like, do you want to? Like, the one thing about podcasting about the royals is, and it's part of the reason why we return to it so often, is... first off, because people like when we talk about them. And secondly, a podcast allows you to be a little more free in what you're saying, a little more open in what you're saying. When you write about things, those things become permanent and people react to that permanence with a lot of vehemence. Like, how dare you have written this thing? And that's fine. I mean, you know, that's what writing is. Writing has a permanence to it. And you should, as a writer, you know, be responsible with your writing.
And I think people react differently. You know,
right. But I'll be blunt. Royal fans online are irritating as hell. And that doesn't mean if you like the royal family that we think you're irritating. But as a fandom, they are likely to latch on to any bit of blasphemy or whatever they... an incorrect assumption, whatever. And it can just be exhausting dealing with them a lot of times on social media, and they come across your writing and then they spend literally days. We have been brigaded. And I mean, when I say brigaded, I mean thousands of them come into our replies. We have been brigaded by Meghan fans and we have been brigaded by Kate fans.
Right, right.
And part of that is, and we're actually going to get into some of this when we talk about this today, our coverage is not fandom based. We are not royal fans. We are royal commenters. And I would even go further and say we are royal fashion commenters. That is the focus. That has always been the focus. And while we tend to do podcasts about the family drama when it comes up, Meghan and Harry's documentary, Harry's autobiography, all of that we talked about here on the podcast, because it's easier to have a freewheeling conversation than try and constantly hedge every word that you're writing with, you know, an explanation or a proviso or, you know, that sort of thing. So, yes, we're going to talk a little bit about the things that we observed that are more observational than the kind of stuff we talk about on the site. Just like literal things like how shitty they both looked wearing those dumb crowns. Well, you know, stuff like that. But also, I want us to get into a discussion later about fandom, about royal fandom, and why we tend to piss them off so often, even though we're not huge royal critics. We just sort of tread a middle of the road line where we praise them when we think they've done something right and criticize them when they think they've done something wrong. And we have a very sort of jaded view of royalty in general. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. I know you wanted to, well, we both did, wanted to talk about the most annoying, embarrassing homosexual
oh
in
God,
America
yeah.
right now, George Santos, the representative from New York.
It's been a bad week for the homosexuals. I mean, we also had Anderson Cooper last night.
Anderson Cooper pissed off everyone.
I know,
on
but
Twitter
we're not going to talk about that. But that's something I was like, oh, okay, Jesus.
Yeah, bad week for the
Queens.
The Queens.
Sergeant.
My only thing about George is
George
that
Santos, not
George Santos.
George Santos.
I just recognize that guy, not him literally, but who he was, what his type was, the second I laid eyes on him.
Right.
And I actually did know about him before the scandals broke about all the stuff that he made up. I knew about him back when he was running because it was notable that his opponent, his Democratic opponent, was also a gay man. It was one of the few times that two gay men from two different parties were running against each other. And I noted then that what later turned out to be true, that is one big phony, messy queen. And I guess this is the only reason we're weighing in on it is because, and I did tweet this once where I said, any queer male who goes to our socializing spaces, in other words, those places where queer men, so gay bars, that sort of thing, gay social scenes, gay neighborhoods, whatever. Anybody who has spent time in that world knows some George Santos, knows some messy liar who's always scamming people, always a mess.
Right.
And that is what I saw the second I clapped eyes on him.
Well, he's a psychopath.
He's an asshole.
He's a psychopath. He's horrible. He's a horrible person. The sad part about all this to me is that it's sad that, you know, you want to root for the people in your community, you know,
right,
whether it's a black person or a woman or a queer person. But at the same time, you have this horrible representation of your community. And, you know, you just have to condemn them. I mean, you have to. Yeah.
And go ahead.
Sorry, my voice. But it's a shame because, you know, you're like, oh, great. This is the first Brazilian-American, a queer person,
right?
Blah, 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 but also an asshole.
He's not the first queer or gay representative. He's also not the first drag queen to be elected into office, although no one knew he was a drag queen when he was elected. So at least he's not a trailblazer. Other people blazed, as is so often the case with conservative queer men and women, they wait for the trailblazers to blaze that trail for them, and then they come in and they, you know, pull the ladder up behind them, to mix my metaphors.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go.
And it's also a very sad state that, you know, people from the same party don't even say anything anymore because they want to keep the vote. So that part drives me insane. Like, you can't even pinpoint the horrible people in your own party. You know, it's just like, oh, no.
He is a Republican, so let's be clear here.
Well, true, but still. It's like, oh, okay, so we need the vote. And it's just, it just goes, you know. He just keeps going. I mean,
he was arrested this week.
Right.
On charges of fraud. It remains to be seen. I mean, I don't know. Republicans get brought up on charges all the time,
all the time.
And they stay in office or they run again. Someone immediately
paid $500,000 to bail him out.
Of course, there's big money to keep him in there.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into politics because, oh my God, it's such a mess. And besides, we're not political commentators, but we are queer commentators. And we had that bitch, that messy ass lying bitch, pegged from the second we saw her. In matters of representation, I do think it's a shame. It's always a shame when queer people reach some height and they turned out to be bad people and they turn out to be bad representations of our community.
Right.
However, I do believe others may disagree. I don't think someone like George Santos hurts gay people or queer people generally as a group at all. Like, people aren't looking at him and going, see, this is what's wrong with the gays.
No, not in this case.
Not in this case. So I'm trying to hold in a sneeze. I'm sorry. I don't want to sneeze into my mic. I think he's a shithead, but I have never once looked at him and thought, oh, he's so bad for our community. Like, fuck him. Our community... First off, we're strong enough that we can deal with assholes in public. And he's not the first. I mean, for Christ's sake, look at Caitlyn Jenner. I mean, what an asshole she is.
Right.
Just an asshole.
Right.
We're used to seeing bad queer people take public and or Martina Navratilova, who's also a TERF at this point. That's just the nature of it. We should, as a community, not cringe too much. We should actually, we shouldn't embrace them, but we should embrace the discussion about them. We shouldn't shy away from saying, yes, that guy is an asshole. And not only that, but there's a lot of guys like that in queer social spaces. However, you know, there's a lot of bad everybody.
Right. I hope we get to that point soon that, you know, we have so much representation that it doesn't matter. You know, we can easily criticize these people without feeling guilty.
Yeah.
Or you know, questioning anything else. It's just very sad. And he's a horrible, horrible, horrible
person. He's a shithead. He's just a terrible, low-class.
Horrible, low-class, horrible person.
Can you tell Lorenzo hates him?
Oh, I fucking hate that man.
People think I'm the bitch in this relationship, and I am so not.
Because, oh my God, and I it drives me up the wall when people get away with the shit like the way he does. I mean, it just drives me crazy. Just horrible, horrible. And, and you know, one more reason to do your fucking research before you vote. Make sure you know exactly who you're voting for as opposed
to... Well, I mean, I blame... I don't think the media did a very good job of vetting him because all this stuff came out about him after he was elected.
But there were shit.
And I also think the Democratic Party of New York State did a terrible, terrible job of dealing with him.
But some local news had published shit about him. And, you know, these are the people voting for him. And they just, I guess,
the Democrats should have made more out of it then.
Well, that I agree. I mean, we're not aggressive enough. And here we go with politics. We're not aggressive enough. And I've said this many, 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 many times. We just expect things to, you know, fall into place.
Yes. And Democrats feel that you can appeal to people's better nature. I mean, one of the things that drives me most nuts in political discourse is when people say, well, history will judge them. Mm-hmm. Unkindly. History doesn't give a shit. History isn't a real thing. History is written by people. History is flawed, flawed, flawed. And many, many, many terrible people got away scot-free, and history doesn't talk about them. So when I hear that, it drives me nuts. It's like, comfort yourself with visions of heaven if you want. But that sort of thing does nothing. It does nothing to say that, history will... History doesn't give a shit.
Who gives a shit?
What about now? What about right now?
Yeah, you can say that about Trump. Oh, history will be, you know, not kind to... Who gives a fuck? I'm the one who spent 4 years with that shit.
We're the ones that have to live
with it. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it doesn't matter.
I don't care about history.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if someone in the future was going to read about it.
Lorenzo, it's red hot.
I'm the one going through the shit right now. So history books in the future, I don't give a fuck.
Anyway, we just wanted to shout out that messy ass queen. Tell him we see you, we know you, we think you're a piece of shit.
Oh my God, the man.
You do nothing.
It's horrible to affect
how, you know, queer people are perceived, or I simply refuse to believe that he's a damage to the community. Fuck that. I mean, there's so many terrible queers in our history. There's an entire book called Bad Gays, actually. It's a really good book. We reviewed it for the Washington Post last summer. That just outlines all these terrible gays, terrible queer people in history. There's a long line of us, and I am not embarrassed by these people because I never subscribe to the idea that me or anyone else in my community had a responsibility to be, the perfect, upstanding, morally upright. No, that's not, whatever. People can be messy. People can be terrible, and I'll judge them on their own terms. George Santos, I judge you. You're a piece of shit.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, moving on from that. Just a light touch in on the Writers Guild of America strike, which is going on now.
Still going on, yeah.
Well, it might be going on for a while because the studios are not blinking. Pardon me. And we wanted to do a shout out. Number one, we're writers. We're not members of the Writers Guild, but we'll always take the side of writers in any sort of union disagreement. Part of the reason the strike, there's a lot of reasons why they're striking right now. But a big part of it has to do with how all these streaming services never set up payments for their writers that pay them their due. These shows get written and then they get watched millions of times on Netflix, and writers don't get residuals.
Their pay
for that.
Doesn't reflect that.
Exactly. And there's also the threat that they're also striking against is the encroaching threat of artificial intelligence taking over, which is just a terrible idea, and it'll never happen. It'll never work. But a lot of people are going to lose their jobs while idiots try and make that work. And that, and they're, you know, so what they're out there marching for and striking for is important. And our, you know, we're lucky enough that our timeline, the people that we follow on social media and who follow us, a great deal of them work in media or in television. So half the people on our Twitter timeline are people that we follow are striking.
Right.
And I just wanted to give a shout out that we actually support this wholeheartedly.
Oh, yeah.
And to note to our readers, in case you haven't noticed, it's having an effect on us because shows are shutting down. Talk shows are shutting down left and right, which means we haven't had coverage for any of people appearing on talk shows. And we rely on that. That's about 15 to 20% of our celebrity coverage every week. And then, and this week, the MTV Movie Awards happened. You might not know this, but they happened on Sunday night. They basically shut down this. No one showed up for the red carpet. And we were planning on that. I think I even mentioned it on this podcast that we were going to have the Met Gala, the Coronation, and the MTV Awards all in the same week. And that was going to be half our content for May. So yeah, we take a hit because we literally take a financial hit because there's not enough stuff to cover because everything's shutting down in Hollywood. And even with all that, full support for our writing brothers and sisters.
I think that it's also a great reminder that without these people, without the writers, I mean, you know, very little can go on, keep going on because they're the ones writing the jokes. They're the one writing the lines.
They're writing all of it.
Writing all of it. And you know, we, you know, people are talented to take these words and make it into something else. But without those words written down, you can't do anything. You can't be an actor. You can't be anything.
Some actors love to claim that they ad-libbed their lines on set or they made all these changes to the script to better reflect their vision of the character. Jenna Ortega, the Wednesday star, she got into a bit of trouble because she... Mm-hmm. She all but said, I rewrote the whole show because the writing was terrible and blah, 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 blah.
And who were you before that show?
And more power to her. She's really a rising star right now and she's got her fans, but that is...
an obnoxious thing to say.
Pure horseshit.
Yeah.
Sets aren't run that way.
Right.
Actors can come in and make line changes or can argue about the direction of it, but they're not going in there and rewriting whole scripts.
No, that's
and
not true. That's
she's something like happen. 21 years old, and I don't deny that she might have had a lot of input into that character, but I also think that she probably has no idea how much work goes into the final script that landed on her, you know, in her inbox or whatever. People worked on that for weeks and months to pull that story together and to make it part of an arc of like however many 10 episodes or whatever. The fact that you might have rewritten a few lines or talking about direction does not negate the amount of work that a whole staff full of people did to put that together. There's also the issue that And the studios are using this as an argument for why they don't need to hire so many writers. You have these hit award-winning shows like The White Lotus, which is entirely written and produced by Mike White. He's the only writer on the show. He doesn't have a writing staff. Or Sam Levinson, who does Euphoria and apparently writes all of those episodes by himself. I won't get into the fact that single writers on shows often tend to reveal some deep flaws in those shows. And I'm not going to start getting into what the flaws of Euphoria or White Lotus are, but I think when those shows go off the rails, White Lotus hasn't really gone off the rails, but there are times when the writing on White Lotus is so clearly that of a middle-aged white man.
Right.
And he's tackling all these subjects and all these characters that are not middle-aged white men. And sometimes that comes through. Similarly, I think Euphoria, Sam Levinson on Euphoria, has a real blind spot for some of the actresses on that show and a real need to shock people. And his worst impulses are never reined in. You also see these criticisms against Tyler Perry, who famously does not, he usually writes all of his movies, writes his TV shows, does everything himself. Right. And can't argue with the man's success, but I would also argue that his output is narrow in its focus. And at times, it just you feel like you're getting lectured to by Tyler Perry.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when you write so many shows, it gets to a point that, yeah, the first one is a big hit, but then everything else after that comes, it becomes very repetitive.
You know,
it's just like, all right, we already know where you're going with this, what your take is, and so on.
And the television structure tends to reward repetitiveness. Just do the same thing you did last time. Just
exactly.
keep doing the same
exactly.
thing you did last time. The entire medium rewards that in a way that I just want to say, not to toot my own horn or any other writer's horn, but if you're an author, if you're a book author, unless you're someone like Stephen King who can coast on your reputation, you can't just do what you did the last time. Every time you propose a new book or whatever, or come up with a new
book. Right,
right. It's got to be something new. It's, you know, even if you're a romance writer who's churning out, you know, 15 books a year, you still got to figure out a way to make it new. Otherwise, it's not creative and it's not interesting.
Right. And writers are not only creative and produce something, but they also fight for creativity, for diversity, uniqueness, and so
exactly.
on. Because
points of view.
Yeah, because the studios tend, like you said, they want to do the same thing. They want to do whatever made money before. They're not interested in creating something different and new. And
no.
that's the creative people fighting for that stuff all the time.
Right.
So, yeah, we need to pay these people a
lot
more.
We stand with the WGA. That's all basically what we wanted to say.
Another point made, I was listening to NPR, and one of the writers made a very good point that, you know, you don't even think about these things, or at least I didn't, that shows are a lot shorter now. And so they make less money.
Well, that's just it. And we were just talking to my sister who was doing a Lost rewatch. And she couldn't get over. She's like, do you realize there was something like 25 episodes per season for however many seasons?
Right.
We forget that only until about 10 years ago, it was standard for a television show to have somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25 episodes per season. Now, most of them, it's no more than 10.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're so used to, you know, Netflix style type of shows that I'm guilty of that. I click and I say, well, let me see how many episodes. Do I really want to commit? With this strike now, I'm going to think twice before I do that because, you know, you have to support people around you.
Right.
It can't be just about you.
It just seems to me as an observer of the television industry and someone who occasionally writes about television, the streaming model is not viable as it currently stands. How many of these streamers are losing subscribers left, right, and center,
right.
cutting all these shows, cutting all these things from their libraries so you can't even watch
old
shows.
Well, that's the thing.
It's clear that there's too many of them, and there's entirely too much content being put out there. I can't follow. I mean, your average viewer is following about 5% of what is out on television in any given month. And these shows cannot grab an audience, and they cannot. And then the other thing is that these budgets on a lot of these streaming shows are massive and bloated. And they, you know, you need to justify the amount of money because they're doing a lot of genre shows, a lot of fantasy style shows, and shows that require lots of special effects. And those things cost money. I hope my beloved Sandman does not get canceled. I'm so scared about that. It is there for another season, but I mean, there are 8 volumes of that series, and I don't think they're going to get 8 seasons, and that's going to break my heart. But I do think we are witnessing very soon the collapse of streaming within the next 3 or 4 years. The way they're all merging, the way they're all purging. Whatever the model is for streaming, it's not going to be what we see right now. In fact, I hate to say it, but we're probably going to look at an ad-supported model very soon. More and more ad-supported streaming. And I also think the time has passed or peaked, let's say, on the binge watch. I think more and more these shows that come out once, like Succession. That the model for Succession it's right there. That show comes out once a week and people won't shut the hell up about that show all week long. You don't get that with a binge watch. You don't get that buzz. You don't get that suspense. Shows like Yellow Jackets, the way people love to talk about these shows online, it's because they're not all released at once.
Right.
These seasons that come out all at once, you get a weekend of discourse and discussion, and that's it. And what happens is, if you were a casual, if you were casually interested in some show, the entire thing will be spoiled within 2 days of release. And then it's up to you whether you really want to watch
it. Right, right. And sometimes you can't even have a conversation with someone because you're like, oh, no, no.
I'm only on episode.
Oh, I haven't watched that yet. Or, you know, oh, I haven't started yet. So then,
to be honest, I never talk to people about TV anymore. I never do, because we're all watching different things or we're on different schedules with what we're watching. Anyway, that was kind of a rant about TV, and really we just wanted to check in with the writers and let them know we're with you. And all TV fans should be, and movie fans should be, supporting the writers. They never, ever get their due in Hollywood. They never, ever have. There were jokes about writers being taken advantage of that go back to the 1930s. You would hear them in, you know.
It's true.
discussions of Hollywood back then. Anyway. Anything else to add to that?
No, that's that.
All right. Coronation.
Ooh.
Coronation. We were never going to be in awe of it. We were never going to walk away. Oh my God, what a beautiful, blessed day. That was never going to be us. Listen, if that's you, that's fine. I mean, whatever, that's fine.
There's a lot of pageantry
there. There's a lot of tradition there. If that fills you with emotion, well, I'm not going to make fun of you for it, but definitely, I'm not that guy, and neither are you.
No, I'm more into the fashions and all that, but, you know, I'm not about the event. I mean, no. I'm not about the whole tradition.
I have seen enough footage through the years of Elizabeth's coronation to realize that, yes, he did scale this down tremendously. Her coronation was massive, and everybody wore gowns and tiaras. This was not as formal. He forbid anyone from wearing tiaras. So I get it. It seems very grandiose and silly. And I'm not even arguing against that. But he actually did cut quite a bit of it out. That doesn't necessarily justify it to the critics who think that way too much money and time was spent on this. But I just wanted to put that out there. This really was a slimmed down version of a coronation. But what struck me about it, and we got some pushback on this, was how somber it was. And, you know, people pushed back and said it's a solemn occasion. And a wedding and a graduation are solemn occasions, but they're not somber ones. Like, just because there's a ceremony involved doesn't mean that it had to be as humorless and dour.
But they're both like that. That's the issue.
The problem is that Charles and Camilla, we're not talking warmth. We're not talking big smiles. In fact, when you, strangely enough, even though Charles has been in the public eye his entire life, the larger a crowd you put him in front of, the more stiff and uncomfortable he gets. He's actually, when you see him do walkabouts and he does his royal duties, he's pretty good with people one-on-one. In fact, I'd say he's warmer with people one-on-one than his mother ever was. There's so many pictures of Charles red-faced and laughing with people, which you never saw the Queen act that way. But you put them on that balcony, or you make them walk down that, you know, process with those, I'm sorry, those crowns are fucking dumb looking. You look like you should be on a cereal box with that thing on your head. That they're just dumb looking. I don't care that they're 600 years old. I don't care about the tradition. They look ridiculous on both of their heads, and they looked like they felt ridiculous. Thing about Elizabeth, don't get me wrong, when she used to wear that crown in her old age, she looked like a chess piece. She looked just as silly in it. But when she was crowned, she was 26 years old, she was quite pretty, she was thin, she was long-necked, she could work it. And she knew how to work it, actually. I don't know why she knew how to work it, but she did know how to pose with that thing on her head. And if you look at the pictures of her in the 1950s wearing that crown, she manages it. It's okay. She doesn't look like an idiot in it. But I'm sorry, you put two 75-year-olds in that thing, and unless they're full of something, vim and vigor and charisma, and neither one of them are, they looked uncomfortable, and they looked very silly.
I also think that it doesn't go with the time. I mean, you look at her pictures. They're what, 70-year-old pictures? I mean, it makes sense. You look at them as vintage things, you know, at old pictures. You look at a picture now of him and her, it's like, why? I mean, that's my first question, why?
Is, as Americans, we can say that. But I also know I follow the British press enough. He couldn't have not worn the crown. And like, there's, it is a coronation. You have to be crowned.
I mean, come on. He wanted every bit of it.
That's true. But
yeah,
I mean, was just no escaping how dumb they looked. How he is the oldest person to take the throne in Great Britain's history.
Right.
The oldest in its thousands and thousands of years.
She wouldn't die, so.
And that you want, in your romantic view, if you have one, of kings and queens being crowned, you don't have, you're not crowning grandparents. You're crowning young people or vigorous people who are going to reign and rule and whatever. And I'm going to be blunt in a way my writing never could be. All I could see, and I think what all anyone can see, most people can see when they look at a 74-year-old or however old he is, being crowned for the first time, is that, well, we're just looking at our watches and waiting for this to end. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have a long reign. It's possible he could live as long as his mother, but even then, you're going to get 20 years and then you're out. So it doesn't feel like the start of something. It feels like he is holding on to something so he long enough so he can pass it on to William.
Right.
Which is interesting, because William will probably be about 60 or in his 60s when he becomes king. He's not going to be much younger than Charles. The day of youthful kings and queens is pretty much over.
Well, yeah. Who knows? They look very,
uncomfortable.
They look uncomfortable.
They didn't look regal.
Yeah, they're just, I don't know if they have health issues, but they don't look healthy. They don't look anything.
Right.
But, you know, it was his time, and he definitely wanted it.
I honestly think his mother, in retrospect, probably should have stepped down about 15 to 20 years ago, even though abdication was never in her vocabulary.
Oh, God, no. Yeah,
but
no.
I don't think it helps him to start his reign as a visibly, you know, depleted old man. He does not, you know, possess a lot of vigor. He doesn't possess a lot of charisma. It's just not there. So he just looks like this old chess piece. And she, and you know, when the queen looked like an old chess piece, she had 50 years of experience behind her as a queen. Like, we watched her age. Well, I didn't watch her age into the role because she was old when I was born, or nearly old when I was born. But, you know, she went from a young woman to a grandmother in the role, and we were able to sort of accept
some
of the silliness
of it. It's interesting because I always ask this question, and I'll never get an answer, correct answer, I guess. It's like, who supports that? Because people do. I mean, you look at the pictures. There are thousands and thousands of people lining up every time something like that happened. But, and then at the same time, we get emails like we got, or replies on Twitter saying, guys, you know, a lot of us couldn't give a shit about all this, blah, blah, blah. So I guess it's kind of divided. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, every poll about the royal family shows great division in Great Britain, and their popularity waxes and wanes. But yes, there's always been a strong Republican contingent in Great Britain, who anti-monarchists, who want to abolish the monarchy. And apparently the police in London were arresting all of them so that they wouldn't ruin the day. That's kind of a scandal. Yes, and this is something, you know what, this leads very well into my next point about the fashion. Specifically, I wanted to address, because this has come up on our site, it has come up in social media, and this is not frivolous. I mean, this is important, I think, for me to address, for us to address as bloggers, as people have written about the royal fashion for a long time. More and more, the discussion around royal fashion is about imposing meanings on every choice they make. Right. So every time Kate wears earrings or a brooch or something that belonged to another family, it's a loving tribute. And if, for instance, last week Kate wore a pair of, what were the pumps?
Altuzara, I believe.
Altuzara pumps that Meghan has been known to favor. But let me just say here, before we get into that, those are standard rich lady pumps. You will see them on every socialite and half the royals time. I understand that Meghan wore them consistently, and maybe she even said they were her favorite pump, but they are a very standard black slingback pump. Very much in line with the way Kate dresses, which is very royal and classic and conservative. People had a field day on social media and on a lot of sites and publications claiming that Kate was copying Meghan. And it's bullshit. I think it's bullshit, but let me just explain first why I think it's bullshit, which again, they're classic shoes. They're classic slingbacks. They're not, they're black. They're not even that notable in a lot of ways. I had to go look. I was like, are they something that Meghan wore? And I covered her and I went through our coverage and yes, she did wear them more than once. So yeah, you could say that they're a favorite, but they are also a very plain black shoe. And the fact that Kate was wearing them, let me put it to you this way, to any woman listening, let's say you have a favorite pair of shoes. And then at some point, a year after you wore them, your sister-in-law buys a similar pair. Is she copying you or did she just buy a pair? Like, do we have to assume some sort of drama here?
Mm-hmm. I find the whole thing interesting because we cover fashion, you know, all the time. I know certain brands and certain brands, they keep, you know, popping up all the time.
The like stylists
love them. Javita Rossi, you know, all of it. The LK Bennett right. shoes. A bunch of them. they keep wearing them. So I'm not gonna lie here and say that I wasn't surprised because I ID things, so I knew that Meghan had worn those shoes many times. So when I typed out to Zara there, I was like, oh, her shoes, of course. But I wasn't like, oh my God, she planned all this.
I mean, there's a whole hashtag copy Kate that's, you know, a lot of the Sussex fans write about her. And there is this insistence that Kate is constantly copying Meghan's style. And this is a big reason why this is absurd to me is Meghan and Kate have two of the most bland, nondescript styles and preferences you could ever ask for because they both did royal duties. So I remember one time Kate was wearing a camel trench coat and there were all these pictures of Meghan wearing a camel trench coat. And I'm like, okay, half the women of means in the Western world mm-hmm. own a camel trench coat. This is, yes, you're going to find things that Kate wore that sometimes Meghan wore. And that's because the two of them tend to wear extremely basic pieces in very restricted styles. Meghan's a little looser now that she's out of the role. But and they did have differences in terms of Meghan liked to wear her belts higher. Meghan likes to wear her clothes looser. There were definite preferences there. But and Kate, obviously, she likes very, very tailored, very slim cut clothing that accentuates her waist. She likes coat dresses and she likes to dress like it's 1947 or something like that. She likes to dress like the queen when she was a princess. So she's very retro in her style. You're going to find some overlap between both women, especially if you're comparing it to how Meghan dressed when she was doing royal duties. And the idea that, and listen, I can't convince people that Kate's not copying Meghan. If you want to believe that, that's fine. But it absolutely makes no sense on the face of it. Meghan is extremely unpopular in Great Britain. Kate is almost always the most popular member of the royal family in every poll that comes up. Charles is upset about it sometimes because she always outpolls him.
Well,
there is no reason for her to be copying her sister-in-law who skipped out of town 3 years ago. There's no, she is very well liked in a way that Meghan isn't. She is beloved by the fashion industry, the British fashion industry, and the British fashion press in a way that actually Meghan isn't either. There is simply no reason to think that she would want to be copying her much less popular sister-in-law, except if you're buying into, and this is where all this comes from, unless you're buying into a certain storyline that certain writers need you to believe. And that's fine. I'm not offended by royal gossip. I think royal gossip can be a lot of fun. And I'm not offended that there are sites and publications that that spur these sorts of storylines on. It's fun to speculate, that sort of thing. But we're not a gossip site. I never believe these stories. I think they're very narrow and it's sort of a shallow view of their roles. Like mm-hmm. they're Wilma Flintstone and Betty Rubble constantly fighting with each other. So many of these storylines come down to finding the woman and blaming the woman. So Harry, William, and King Charles have a clearly dysfunctional family that has played out for 40 years. The dysfunction of that family has played out on a worldwide stage for 40 years. Everything that's going on with Harry between his father and his, that's been going on for a long, long time. And the press focuses on two women who basically are just along for the ride and have very little. I know Meghan has a lot to do with Harry's decisions and leaving the country and all that, but the idea that she manipulated him into it, or the idea that Kate is in some sort of battle with Meghan. Kate does not want people thinking of Meghan at all when she goes out. There's not a reason in the world why she would be copying
her. Kate has one purpose, one girl only. She wants to be the queen.
And she's working towards that.
And
she doesn't give a shit about Meghan.
And she's going to keep doing whatever it takes to get there, because that's what she wants to do. And this whole thing, I'm not a fan of Meghan and Harry, but this whole idea that Meghan convinced him to do all this is bullshit.
That's just misogyny.
No, I mean,
that's just misogyny.
You clearly don't know Harry's story. I mean, the man was obsessed with the world, with America, with other things.
Right.
He wanted to do something
hated
else.
Hated his father, hated his brother. Hated the royals, hated the press.
Right,
it was
right.
all there long before he
right,
married.
Right. So it's interesting. Now, about I go to a ton of sites every day, so I do see these stories every day. She wore white because of Princess Diana. She wore black. She wore blue.
That's the other one.
She wore polka dot. She wore I believe that every now and then,
like when she poses with her newborn children outside the hospital, that sort of thing.
She will get inspired, or she will pay a tribute to a moment, but not every goddamn outfit.
Oh, she wears polka dots, and it's, you know, they'll go find some polka dot outfit.
I know.
How many royals wear polka dots?
Like, well, there's only so much print, you know, out there.
And that's the other thing is, while I'm sure William has, you know, loves the memory of his mother, and I'm sure Kate wants to uphold it in whatever ways she can, it does them no good to constantly be bringing her up, especially now that Charles is king and Camilla is queen.
Right.
It does her no good to constantly be reminding everyone of the previous Princess of Wales when she is the current one.
Right.
So these constant, she's paying tribute. No, that's not how royals think. That's not how it works. Right now, William and Kate they're a company man and his wife. They are going to support the king and the queen. So when she wore Diana's earrings on the way into the coronation, it was all, not just was it a loving tribute to Diana, which makes no sense in that context. Diana did not want to see this day at all or be involved in it. But there were other, you know, again, the gossip people and the sites that love to fuel this sort of thing. Oh, it's a big fuck you to Camilla. Big fuck you to Camilla. Okay. What part of you looking at Catherine Middleton makes you think she's going around saying fuck yous to anybody in that family? She is, as you noted, on one track.
Yeah.
She's doing everything she's supposed to do to be the damn queen and to be beloved for it. So all of these ideas of, she's a little fuck used and she's, you know, sabotaging, she's not doing any of that.
I find it very funny. Like the last one, we got an email and I laughed so hard because it was like, Meghan goes hiking wearing like
$2,000 worth of Princess Diana's jewelry. And it's like, well, she's rich.
Okay, well, let me just say, on her level of money, $2,000 is nothing.
Nothing.
Okay?
Nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
People hit the Oscars red carpet in $1 million worth of diamonds.
It's just like, I can see her going hiking with her watch or whatever.
Right.
Is she supposed to remove and get her Target version to go hiking? No. She's going to keep wearing the thousands of dollars one.
And like I said, I have nothing against gossip. I really don't. And I'm not even disparaging the people that are fueling these stories, the writers who fuel these stories. But that's not what we cover. And I don't agree with that sort of, I don't agree with doing that sort of coverage. I would rather talk about how Kate is, you know, evoking classic royal styles. And that's the other thing. She doesn't dress like Diana. She dresses like Elizabeth. And that is very, very deliberate.
Yes.
Because God bless her. I love looking at Diana in the 80s and 90s, but there's a lot of fashion disasters in that woman's history because she was very trendy. And Kate is doing the exact opposite. And that's deliberate.
Yeah,
that is very deliberate.
You can say whatever you want, but she's never tacky.
And she's not trendy either.
No, she's boring many times.
Boring as
yes,
hell.
Yes, but you know that's she chose that style,
right?
And that's what she wears.
So this idea that she's fuck youing Meghan,
right?
No, she's boring. She wants to look like Princess Elizabeth in 1947.
And the same thing with the jewelry. Yes, the jewelry was given to them. Of course they're going to wear them. It wasn't bought at Macy's. So it's stuff that was...
Right. It's generational. It's handed down.
So yeah, yes, they're going to wear that jewelry often. And many times it's going to mean something, obviously.
Right.
But it's not every single time you wear a pair of earrings.
Right.
Jesus, no.
Right. And I realize that those are important Diana earrings that she wore to the coronation. And maybe she did it to support William. But honestly, I even think, why would William want to think about Diana on that day? That day would have been, if Diana were alive, that day would have been insanely painful for her watching Camilla get crowned. It just... And Diana made it very clear in that in her famous interview that she was never going to be queen. She knew this. She knew this by the early 90s, that it was never going to happen. She thought she would remain married to him, but that she would just, they would be separated. And she never thought she'd have the title. She, less than 10 years into her marriage, knew she was not going to ever be crowned queen. So it's, and everybody knew this. Everybody in the family knows this.
Yeah.
There's no reason why anyone would be like, today's the day we pay tribute to Diana. No, it's not. No one would want that.
Yeah. You see, my experience, obviously, with coronations is very limited. I've only seen one. I can't compare it to royal weddings, for example. But I thought it was kind of very slow and boring and just
dour.
not very interesting. The looks were okay in general. Mm-hmm.
I did think from what I could see of Catherine's McQueen gown, it was very pretty.
Yeah, we couldn't see much, but
it'll wind up in a museum.
Yeah. I mean, it looked pretty. Things will look pretty, but very low key. The celebration in general, I thought it was very low key. The concert was an embarrassment.
They couldn't get anybody good
they
for that
They couldn't get
concert.
Anyone. They got Katy Perry singing.
And she sounded like crap.
She sounded really bad. I don't know why. But, you know, they couldn't get great people. I mean, it's ironic that they got American people to go and sing for them.
Right.
They couldn't
and
get
then they
British
appeared
people.
On American Idol. So weird.
I know. They couldn't they couldn't get British people to sing. So that was embarrassing.
And then there was, of course, the other bit was, you know, Harry showed up. Without Meghan or his kids, which was as it was planned and announced. And as I said here a long back when it was announced, Meghan and Harry released a statement saying that it was their decision for her not to go. But I still don't believe that. See what I mean? I'm not opposed to royal gossip. I don't quite believe that because I think the family didn't want her to go. And for everyone to make it less scandalous for everyone,
yes, I think,
let's just say Meghan decided
not to go. I mean, just think about it. If Meghan and Harry were there together as a couple, it would be nothing but pictures of them. Everyone would be talking about them all the time. And they didn't want that.
I don't think even Meghan would have wanted that.
Right. Nobody, I think.
And, Harry went and did his, this is the thing, I know, listen, Meghan and Harry can be really annoying in a lot of ways, and I can't say they've handled themselves perfectly in the last several years, but when push comes to shove, like the Queen's funeral, or this, they show up and do the work, they don't make it about them, as much as the press and their detractors want to make it seem that way. Mm-hmm. Harry did not show up. He was very quiet in the way he entered, very sat quietly in his pew, waved at the cameras, and got the hell out of there quickly. And then the press spent all week attacking him for it.
Right.
Everything they could nitpick about him being there, they could. So a bunch of royal reporters, and this is what I mean about people who make their money stirring this shit up. Sometimes they're bloggers, sometimes they write for magazines, sometimes they write for newspapers, but their whole existence is bound up in writing about the royals, which I remind you, ours is not. It doesn't even comprise 5% of our yearly coverage on our site. But a bunch of royal reporters saw a tweet from the House of Dior, which they tweeted that Harry was wearing
Dior.
One of their morning suit. It was a bespoke morning suit created for him. So this turned into a big thing in the British press that Harry had some sort of merchandising deal or spawn con or something like that. And that's just not how that works. Any house can take a picture of someone from a public event, put it on their social media and say, this person's wearing our clothes.
Right, right.
They don't have to pay them for it. They don't have to even go to them and ask. They're in public wearing their clothes. Our inbox is at least 50 of those every single day. And sometimes it's just some celebrity walking down the street and here's what sunglasses she's wearing. Here's what sneakers she's wearing. All of that stuff is sent out to people like us, to send out to the press so that we can report on it. But it does not mean that there was some sort of sponsorship deal.
No, I can't see that happening. I just can't. And I'm very cynical about everything. And I don't think so. No, it wouldn't look good.
He's not that stupid.
Yeah,
I mean, Harry
right.
wants to make money, but he's not going to make money off of modeling clothes at his father's coronation. That, I mean, again, people use a little bit of common sense. Does that make any sense for him?
Right, right.
And let me just say, like, they've made 100 or 200 million off their various media deals in the last several years. Believe me, Dior is not going to pay him that much money to model that suit.
No, Dior just recognized.
Right. These are common.
And decided to post about it, which I was a little surprised, actually, because houses tend not to do it anymore when it comes to the royal family. They do mention every now and then, but it's not like all the time anymore. They're very careful about all that.
Well, you will see houses mention, like, it's when it's women's wear.
Right.
A lot of Kate's favorite designers don't do it all that much. McQueen did not tweet or do any social media about her gown, but I suspect she has I don't think she has royal warrants with these companies, but she probably does have agreement with them that she will wear their stuff, but they cannot use her in any sort of materials. That doesn't mean that Harry said that they could use him. It just means that he went and got a Dior suit, more than likely, because Meghan favors Dior a lot. And whatever, but the idea that he got paid for it, that there was some sponsorship deal, that's not normally how these things work. It would make very little sense for him to risk that kind of blowback for, let me just say, he would only be getting at most a couple hundred thousand dollars, at most, for wearing one outfit. So I think part of the reason Dior did it is because menswear houses never get to post about the royals, because Charles and William don't really wear designer clothing. So I think they just grabbed the opportunity and the British press decided to trash Harry for it because they were just looking for something.
It's true. I agree. So that's that. I think that's that. And it's interesting to see how people, you know, overanalyze everything.
Right.
And you know, that's what they do. But it tends to get a little aggressive every now and then, and you know, people come to our site and start yelling at us for things we say, but whatever, I'm used to it. It doesn't bother.
This isn't a complaint about that. It's just an acknowledgement that there are people who, and publications and websites that really work to rile up the various fans, whether it's the Meghan fans or the Kate fans. And we have never done that, which has frustrated people who are really into royal watching, because we tend to hew down the middle. Sometimes we'll criticize Kate for the way she's dressing or the way she's acting, and other times we'll criticize Meghan. We don't really stand on one side or the other. Again, the reason we cover the royals is because from a fashion, and the reason we only cover Kate, not the rest of them. If Meghan makes a public appearance, we'll cover her because people can't stop talking about her. But for the most part, we cover Kate and, to a lesser extent, Meghan, because people are the most interested in what they have to wear. Mm. And they are the most fashionable royals.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sorry, but like Sophie Wessex and Zara Tyndall or whoever you want to talk about, they're just not as interesting to report on. And a lot of royal watchers tend to get annoyed with us because we don't report on the other royals. But we have a focus, and ours is celebrity-based fashion. Those two are the most celebrity-like royals there are. And there is some interest on our part in dissecting how they navigate royal restrictions and how they have used fashion to, especially Catherine to really brand herself. She mm-hmm. is not Diana's successor. She is not Camilla's successor. She is Elizabeth's successor, and that is in every outfit she wears.
If you look at any picture of her, of them together, yeah. or the way she behaves, that's what she wants
where
to be.
All yeah. her cues yeah. are coming from, not Camilla, yeah. not Meghan, mm-hmm. not Diana.
I agree.
Kate does not want any scandal. She does not want any sort of negative attention. She just wants to serenely coast through royal life, being at, you know, soaking up the adulation
and patiently
and never furrowing
her
brow at the slightest thing. So these ideas of she's sending fuck yous to Camilla or she's, you know, whatever, it's not true. It makes no sense for her personality. It does not benefit her role in any way. And that is not how royals look at fashion, look at jewelry, look at their public presentation. They are not sending little messages. It's just not done. And to before we wrap up here, I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to say about the coronation?
No, I think that was it. That was, like I said, just boring, low key. Some interesting looks.
Didn't change any minds.
But didn't change. Yeah, I mean, it made me to one of the things that made me pay attention to. It was Queen Letizia. What's her name? I'm sorry. No, it's not Queen
Letizia.
That's what I said. Letizia. Queen Letizia. I thought she looked great. Yeah. And then I went back and I started looking at some of her looks, and she does dress very nicely.
Yeah,
so,
very royal.
Yeah.
I know people want us to cover her all the time, too.
So I was, yeah, it was one of the people that I never paid too much attention to. And I'm like, oh, I have to watch the way you dress.
Just to return to the question about fashion and sending little messages in fashion, this is something we're fighting generally, and we tweeted about this, is that in the last year or two, celebrity fashion discussions have turned towards these sort of fan fictions, these fandom-oriented discussions where in order to justify or explain what someone's wearing, there has to be some secret message behind it or something, blah, blah, blah. And yes, it's true that Taylor Swift did sort of popularize this sort of thing with her fans, but that doesn't mean it's happening across the board. And a recent example of this is the Met Gala, when every single person that wore pink, someone was online saying, oh, they wore pink because Karl Lagerfeld hated pink, and it was a fuck you to Karl Lagerfeld. And there is no indication that Karl Lagerfeld hated pink. Pedro Pascal was wearing shorts because that was a fuck you to... No, it wasn't. No one went to the Met Gala to disparage the person that was being honored at the Met Gala. That's not the way that works. Anna Wintour would not have allowed it. Valentino would not design an outfit and say, oh yeah, let's screw over Karl Lagerfeld. No one at Valentino would do that. No stylist would agree to doing that because politically it's just bad. That's all I'm saying is when you read these little storylines and fan fictions, that's not fashion commentary, that's fandom.
Right.
And we have always been, from the minute we shut down Project Runway, our fan blog, we have always run away from fandom-oriented discussions. Very happy that those worlds exist, but that's not what we do. And this is why we tend to piss people like Outlander fans off or royal fans off. It's because we don't approach these things from a fandom perspective.
Yeah, the thing is that these fans, they go online and looking for places where they can post something. Right. And if these places that they find do not agree with them, so they get angry. That's how they navigate, you know, the internet, looking for places.
Looking for blasphemers, basically. Yeah. Who has blasphemed the thing that I love
the
most?
Right, right.
So... All right, I think we've covered all of it.
Yes.
Would love to hear your thoughts on celebrity fashion, royal fashion, the coronation, whatevs, whatever we talked about today. So we'll be back next week. But until then, whatever crosses on... I messed up the line again. You know what? Screw it. Love you. Mean it. Bye-bye.
Bye.